Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Bellingham podcast. We hope this message will be informative, inspirational, and helpful. Donations to support this work are greatly appreciated. Visit www.cslbellingham.org and click on the donate button. Remember to share our podcast. Thank you.
Well, good morning and welcome, everybody. I'm Cindy Clay. I'm the practitioner of the day along with Susan and Wanda today, and we're just here loving on you. Just a couple of reminders, if you haven't silenced your cell phone, that would be a good thing to do. And there is a prayer vessel on the table in the back. If you would love to have some prayer supporting you, we would love to do that. All right, so let's just breathe together. And breathe in the magnificent love that fills this space. This love that we have welcomed in with the ringing of the bell, with your arrival this morning, with the presence of the musicians who've been practicing with such joy. This space is a welcoming, embracing space. And we are here today to share in this beautiful message Reverend Andrea is going to be presenting to us. We are here to say yes to all the love that is waiting right here for our recognition. And it starts right now with this beautiful service, embraced with love, held in love. And so I say thank you. Thank you so much, sweet spirit, for the chance to be together in this magnificent love. And so it is.
And it's been kind of the buzz around here before you all arrived about this talk, because it's a weird title. And the title is Pass By What You Do Not Love. And so the practitioners were like, I wonder what she's going to talk about. And I said, yeah, me too. But actually, this is based on a quote from one of my favorite authors. His name is Phil Cousineau, and he was a student of Jung, and many of the teachers of Jung, and he wrote a book called The Art of Pilgrimage, and it's a classic now, and this was out of the book, and it's the quote goes, "The old hermit along the side of the road whispers, stranger, pass by that which you do not love." And every time I read that, I get a little bit of a chill. And so, you know, the first time I saw that quote, I was thinking, okay, you know, yeah. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized it's such a powerful instruction for the pilgrimage that you and I are on in our lives. Because really, we only have this one life as far as we know. And that's such a powerful instruction. Because if you're like me, for me, it took me a long time to stop doing what other people thought I should do. And it took a long time for me to tune in to what was truly my integrity, no one else's, and then live from that place. And I think what's most powerful about this quote, about pass by what you do not love, it's not permission to not do all the icky stuff we have to do, right? I mean, that's not what that quote is about. You still have to balance your checkbook and go grocery shopping and, you know, either plug in your car or put gas in it, all the little things that we do that, at least tuning into what I love, those don't hit the list. So it's not permission to just shine everything on, but it's really pointing to living from a different place, a place of integrity. And so I was reading this morning a quote. I get a lot of quotes. I'm sure you do too, in my inbox. And this one was from a really famous psychologist named John Wellwood. And he was pointing to something that in our tradition of the science of mind is kind of how we see the world. And it applies to this quote, and I'll tell you how in a minute. But here's the quote that came through Since it is the nature of human beings to live on both the absolute and relative level, we can never reduce reality to a single dimension. We are not just this relative body-mind organism. We are also absolute being, awareness, presence, much larger than our bodily form or personal history. And why this applies to me for this talk is, you know, part of what keeps us bound in not doing our highest love and our deepest integrity is personal history. As a therapist for years and years and years, I worked with people who were wrestling with their personal history. And that's a powerful wrestle, and it's a good one. And I'm sure many of you in this audience have done that work. But that's not all. And that's why I came back into ministry, because I needed to talk about the other part of it, which is the absolute reality you and I live in, the reality where we are not just this unfolding drama of, you know, crappy parents or whatever. I had great parents, but I know I'm fairly rare. from my therapy world, I know I'm really rare. So, you know, we've got all that, but we're so much more than that. And if we only focus on the timeline of historical dimension, we might have a really kind of awful life. If our start was awful, we might think that that's just the nature of things. But it's not just the nature of things. There's so much more. And it has to do with this ultimate dimension that we also, the absolute reality that we also participate in all the time. But for most of us, until we find a spiritual path, we don't realize it. It's there, but it's not there. It's not in our awareness. And so I'm always delighted to see all of you and to see all of you on the live stream, because I have a feeling somewhere along your personal history line, you went, there's got to be more to this world than this. There's got to be more, and I can feel it. How do I find it? How do I find the place that I can tell is there of presence, of awareness, of a greatness beyond the individual happenings of my life? So you walked into a center like this, or sat for meditation, or practiced Tai Chi, or you learned yoga, or you did sacred study, or you did something that all of a sudden that part of you that had been waiting for you to say yes, all of a sudden, as soon as you did anything, it went, I'm seen. And from there, the spiritual path starts. That's where it begins. And my own experience, I don't know if it's true for you, I'm going to ask for a show of hands, but my own experience was that once I started, even if I wanted to stop, I couldn't. It was just too compelling. How many of you have had that experience? Oh, just about everybody. And so what I began to realize is that part of that, allowing that greater reality that's there to show up in me, through me, and as me, part of it was paying attention to the moment-by-moment things that I was doing and the habits. And I talk a lot about habits here because they're very, very potent and not always great. My teacher used to tell a story about a man who was terrified of being burned alive. He just came into this world with that fear, and he lived in a village where all of the trash from the village would go into a central incinerator in the middle of their village. This is long, long ago. We don't do that anymore, mostly. And so one day he's in his house, and all of a sudden the door slams open, and these two huge men come in, and they grab him, one on each side of him, grab his arms, and they're huge, and they're strong, and they start dragging him out of his house. And he's like, what is going on? What are you doing? And that we're going to burn you alive in the incinerator, his greatest fear, right? And he does everything he can. He screams, he yells, he fights, he drops his weight, and he everything he can think of to stop these men from dragging him and burning him alive, and nothing works. And that's the end of the story. My teacher wasn't really great about happy endings. I was always the trouble with him. So I made up a story about the end. You want to hear it? This is a science of mind ending. Until he let go. And when he let go of the fear and realized that it was going to happen, they dropped him before he hit the incinerator. Now, I don't know. That's not the end of the story that I was told, but it's mine. And it comes out of my direct experience of working with habits, and habit energy is like there's this part of us that will take us over and over and over into doing things that we do not love about ourselves and about how to be in the world. And you can name your own poison, but it's a poison, really, actually. You know, whether it's eating sugar when you really don't love the effect of that, or you name it. In Bellingham, I could do a list. You know, gluten, you know, dairy, you know. And it takes a while if you've been habituated to, let's use the example of eating things that actually are poison for your body, but you grew up eating those things. It takes a while for all of us to kind of go, you know, I know that my mind says this is delicious, that this is what we do, but it's not good for me, and I need to stop. You could apply the same thing in relationships. A lot of us do habitual relationships that are not actually good for us, but they're the way we learn to do relationships. Am I talking to anybody here? Come on. And so we have to relearn. We have to learn a different way. And the way we do that is we begin to pay attention. So if you're in a place in your life where you really want to pay attention, what begins to show up are the places where there's a double message going on. So we're saying yes when we want to say no. We're doing things when we know we shouldn't be. And, you know, Marianne Williamson used to say, whenever we do that, it's like putting your foot on the gas and the brake at the same time in your soul. And you don't go anywhere. You're just spinning your wheels and using a lot of your sacred energy to not go anywhere because you're double messaging yourself. So the way we get out of this is we begin to pay attention to the spiritual path we're on, not actually the practices. I'm talking about a different level of attention. We begin to ask ourselves, is this path a path with heart? Is it a path that unfolds me in my integrity? Is it a path that makes me stronger, not weaker? Is it a path that makes me happier rather than more depressed? And that's a tough one. It's a tough one. I brought a quote about this because it says it so well. So it's from Carlos Castaneda and the teachings of Don Juan. Anything can be a path. Therefore, you must always keep in mind that a path is only a path. If you feel you should not follow it, you must not stay with it under any condition. To have such clarity, you need to lead a disciplined life. Only then will you know that any path is only a path, and there is no affront to oneself or to others in dropping it if that is what your heart tells you to do. But your decision to keep on the path or to leave it must be free of fear or ambition. I warn you, look at every path closely and with deliberation. Try it as many times as you think necessary. And the question you should ask is one that only very old people ask. Does this path have a heart? All paths are the same. They actually lead nowhere. They are paths going through the bush or into the bush. And in my own life, I could say that I have traversed long, long paths, but I'm not anywhere. So the question, does this path have a heart, is important. Because if it does, the path is good. So for me, this applies in those minute decisions you and I make on a daily basis, the little things that can rob us of our sacred energy or not. They can take us away from ourselves or take us into ourselves. They can help us live joyfully and allow us to love more fully ourselves and other people or not. And so it's the micro choices that we make in a daily life that he's talking about, and I've found to be true when he says you have to be disciplined. Now, you gotta know that word for a long time was like a bad word for me. I lived with people that was what they wanted me to do, and I rebelled. How about you? School, you know, parents, all kinds of folks were telling me that I needed to do it this way. And that was their definition of discipline. But as I grew on the spiritual path, I found a different definition. One that's actually more accurately true to the word. You know what discipline comes from is disciple. And when I practice discipline, I am becoming a disciple to myself, meaning that I'm paying attention to what's most valuable, most true, most in my integrity, and trying to live from that place. Do I fail? Well, it's like the gym. Uh-huh. Do I go? Yes. Do I go every time I think I should? No. Am I always on track on that path of the heart? Not always. But enough of the time that more and more I can feel when I'm off instead of being off most of the time and then every once in a while finding the way to feeling really, really good. And I'm not talking about just like emotionally feeling good. I'm talking about sanity. I'm talking about the deep level of living from this place more and more fully. And so that's why I've stayed on the science mind path for so long. I was talking to someone who's a friend of mine who's not in our community, but came. She likes what I'm saying, but she said, you know, I could never put my finger on the community. And I said, well, here's the thing, because she's a Buddhist. And as you know, the Four Noble Truths start with there is suffering. And so she's like, you know, I just couldn't put my finger on it. And I said, well, here's the difference between Buddhism and science mind. Is Buddhism, for many people, focuses on the suffering and forgets about the third noble truth, which is the end of suffering. But in the science mind, we recognize there's suffering. I talk about it all the time. I just talked about it. Did you notice? You have suffering. The suffering is caused by habit energy and by doing things with the gas and the brake on. But that's not where we land, because to just know that might not propel you or me into action. What propels us into action is knowing that there is a way out of suffering. So our community is really about how do we heal suffering in ourselves and the world. Not shining it on, not being Pollyanna-ish, although I am, I'll admit it, rainbows are everywhere, but rather really noticing that the world has suffering, we have suffering, our friends have suffering, but that's not the end of the story. There's a way out of suffering. And part of it is living true to who we are. And then really in that state, we have the ability to help. We have the ability to assist in the world suffering, whether it's being an earth steward and encouraging people to live more lightly on the earth and take steps that will turn climate change into a new reality of climate stability, regeneration, whether it's social justice and working for the rights and the privileges of everyone, and noticing the suffering caused when those are violated. Maybe your passion is feeding the hungry. There's a lot of suffering there. Or helping the homeless. There's a lot of suffering there. But if all we do is focus on that, it's not motivating. It's just suffering. And my therapist friends, when I was learning therapy, used to say, you know, when someone's face down in the mud in a ditch, you don't dive in there with them because you're not going to be able to help. Instead, you stand on top of the ditch, grab their feet and pull them out. To do that, spiritually speaking, we have to be prepared ourselves. We have to be stable and strong in our spiritual life. We have to be a disciple to our integrity, to our truth, and live from that, eliminating the places where we've said yes when actually it should have been a no. When we've said, I love you, when actually it was like, I need you. And all the other places we go. So I'm going to do a prayer for myself. And if you would like this prayer for you, all you have to do is, while you're listening, don't drift off. Stay with me and say yes. And so it is at the end. So here's the prayer. I know and accept for myself and for anyone who would choose this prayer that there is a powerful, absolute reality that I live in that is vast and unconditional and is love and wisdom, and it is not limited in any way by my relative experience. And so I turn to that place within me that knows this truth, that knows that I am far more than my outpictured life here in this lifetime. And turning to that, I call upon that love to manifest itself as deep self-love in me, so that I can take good care of my spirit, my mind, and my body, loving these vehicles for my absolute expression more and more fully, tending, becoming a disciple to mind and body and spirit. I also call upon the wisdom of this absolute knowingness that is all that is to assist me in choosing a path with heart, moment by moment, listening deeply for the nod from that wisdom or the shake of the head internally that says, no, not that way, dear one, not that way. And as I open to love and wisdom from the ultimate source of all love and wisdom, I am transformed over and over again as I listen and act from that place within me that is connected to that. And this transformation allows me to more and more fully be filled with joy, be able to assist others, and to know the right path for me with clarity and dignity and integrity. So I'm grateful for this prayer in action in me now. I know that this prayer is now operating for me and anyone who says yes, and that it is a prayer that is eternal, that it will never end, for transformation into becoming a vehicle of love and wisdom is forever unfolding. And I'm grateful for that understanding as well. And so it is.